What's up, everybody out there? This is Kyle Draper joining you for another edition of the Celtics Talk podcast. I'm joined by my guy, A'Sherrod Blakely, who's joining us from the ATL, where the Celtics will take on the Atlanta Hawks on Friday. What's up, big fella?
How you doing? Wait, hold on a second. Okay. Had to finish off my sweet tea. It's kind of hot down here.
Dude, you know you got that Fugazi Chick-fil-A sweet tea that you could get right up here at the Burlington Mall, yo.
It's a different kind of sweet tea in the ATL, Drapes. You don't know about this. You don't know about this.
You got diabetes in a bottle right there, big fella. Hey, we got a good show coming up. Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution will be joining Sherrod for a conversation about Paul Millsap, about Al Horford, and what happened during free agency for Al Horford. But Sherrod, first, let's get into your guy, Isaiah Thomas, and just the role he's been on. We saw it against Washington on Wednesday night, dropping 20 in the fourth quarter. He now leads the NBA in fourth quarter scoring. Is there anything he can't do?
Well, he can't be 6'1", because if he could be 6'1", we would be talking about him as league MVP candidate. Isaiah, I give him a lot of credit, man. Every night, teams know exactly how this is going to play out. It's to the point now where Isaiah, when the fourth quarter rolls around, he taps the wrist to let you know what time it is. He is about to bust you in the fourth quarter. Incredible confidence that he's playing with, great efficiency, and maybe most important to Celtics fans, they're winning most of these games.
Yeah, and what I've been impressed about Isaiah so much, and we mentioned this on Celtics post-up show on CSN each week, is that Isaiah has all the tools offensively. Teams know that, but it's his heart, his will, his mindset in the fourth quarter. He really raises his game. Against Washington, I can't tell you how many times I saw the Wizards defensively have mental lapses. And Isaiah's the type, if you inch off just a second, like if you give him just a hair of an opening, he's going to take it, Sherrod. And he did that several times against the Wizards.
Well, you know, when we talk about Isaiah, we speak a lot about the three-point shooting and getting to the free throw line and things like that. But the one thing we don't talk enough about is his understanding of the game, and particularly the fact that he truly is a student of the game. He knows opponents' weaknesses, and he knows how to exploit them. That's why, you know, when he goes to the hole, he's looking to score. He's not just looking to draw contact. He's not looking to get somebody the ball. He knows exactly how to expose the weaknesses of opponents defensively and get buckets for himself. And he's doing it at an incredible rate that, frankly, a guy of that stature and size, we've never seen that before.
Well, you know, obviously the big question is, will he be able to do it in the postseason? We saw him against Toronto, Sherrod. They shut him down. I know he had 9 points, but 5 of those 9 came in the first couple of minutes of the fourth quarter. From the rest of the way on, I thought Toronto did a good job on him.
Toronto's a different kind of animal, because I think the one thing that Isaiah absolutely has to have is he has to have at least 2 other guys engaged and on fire, or at least playing at a relatively efficient level in order to beat a team like Toronto. Because without Avery Bradley, they're not going to beat Toronto. They can't beat them in a game, let alone a series. They need him. They need Al. They need Jay. Among those 3 guys, 2 of those guys have to be in a good rhythm in order for the Celtics to win, because Isaiah is going to get blitzed like that. And because Toronto, I think, has what I would call sneaky length across the board, they're able to deflect and cause turnovers and just do a lot of things to Isaiah that most teams aren't able to do.
So why should I be so excited then, Sherrod? Why, you know, if he can do it now, that's one thing. But if the playoffs is going to be even more difficult, should I reserve judgment and wait till then? I mean, doing it in January against Washington, that's fine. But I'm all about the money time, baby. When it's time to win in the postseason, I want to see Isaiah do it.
You and me both. But again, he has to have all those guys ready to go to war and handle their business. And the 2 games they played against Toronto, they have been missing one of their key guys. And that, even though, it sounds like an excuse, but that's the reality of this team. They are a team that wins by the collective sums, not the individual ones. As great as Isaiah Thomas has been this season, they can't make a deep playoff run if they don't have all their horses ready to roll. We've seen what that looks like the last 2 years, and it's not pretty.
Now, the All-Star voting second round came out today from the fans. Isaiah Thomas still number 4, Sherrod. Should he be an All-Star starter? To me, I think it's going to be Kyrie and DeMar. Should Isaiah be starting?
No. Those are the guys. I mean, Kyrie Irving is I think, the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. And DeMar DeRozan is the best off guard. And if you look at the off guards and you look at the point guards and you put DeRozan in that mix, he still stands head and shoulders above the rest. Isaiah, to me, is the next best guard. You can make a case for him or John Wall, but I would give Isaiah the edge only because he's outperformed John Wall head-to-head. And John Wall, I know he's got some bumps and bruises, but you know what? Isaiah's played through a few bumps and bruises. In fact, we've seen him at his best. Remember when he had the messed up finger? He went on to score 44
yeah.
the next night. So it's not like the fact that, you know, Wall has some injuries is justification for putting him ahead of Isaiah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Isaiah is probably that third guard that you see in the All-Star game. He'll definitely make it, no doubt about it. When you're the leading scorer in the Eastern Conference, you should be there. But I don't think he'll be voted in. I do think Kyrie Irving and DeMar DeRozan. Let's talk about the Celtics' schedule upcoming, Sherrod. Obviously, they have Atlanta Friday, then Charlotte on Monday, Houston next week as well. And so they got a lot of tough games. How important do you think this stretch is?
I think it's important for them to really start to validate this recent run of success. It's one thing to beat the teams you're supposed to, but when you start looking at making a deep playoff run, you're going to have to beat some teams that, on paper at least, are better than you, or at least record-wise are better than you. And the Celtics have not been able to do that this year. That, to me, is the next hurdle that they have to get past. Once they do that, then you can start realistically talking about making some noise in the playoffs. Because right now, all they've shown thus far is that they're good enough to get in the playoffs and get home court advantage. But beyond that, it remains to be seen with this crew.
Yeah, they're good enough to beat the teams that they are supposed to beat. They haven't beaten the teams that they are supposed to lose to yet. And so that's something we'll take a look at next week. They got Houston, so another opportunity. But on Friday, they take on the Atlanta Hawks. And, Sherrod, I know you had a chance to talk to Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The Hawks in the news a lot lately. They traded Kyle Korver. Paul Millsap's name has come up in trade rumors. Al Horford's going back home. Sherrod, let's listen into your conversation with Chris Vivlamore.
We're here with Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He covers the Atlanta Hawks. And Chris, we're just going to, you know, we're going to just cut to the heart of things. Paul Millsap is the guy that everyone seems to be talking about right now. What's the latest on Paul and just, you know, his availability, if there is even availability?
So the latest basically is they've decided not to move on from him. That they took what I was told, a quote, long, hard look at it to see what they could get. And in the end decided he's just too valuable to them right now. And he clearly is their best player. And this is a team that won seven in a row. You're sitting at fourth in the conference on the heels of the Celtics. You know, they're not out of this by any means. And I think if they would have moved to Paul Millsap, you probably would have saw them fall to the bottom of the playoff race or even out of it. Mm-hmm. I think at one point it was doing their due diligence to see what's available for a guy like that. And then the second part of it is when push comes to shove, what could you have gotten? Mm-hmm. What made sense? And I think to a certain extent, to be perfectly honest, I think there was a power struggle within the organization. And mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say there's an element that wants to move on and get younger. They've got some young players, two first-round draft picks from last year, Torian Prince and DeAndre Bembry, that they want to take a look at. And there's an element that says we're right in this race. We want to stay where we are and see what we can do with it. And so I kind of think that was the internal battle that was going on. And at least for now, they've made almost a public announcement. They haven't publicly said it, but it's almost as public as you can get, saying we're not moving him. So.
And that, for me, was a surprise in all this, because typically teams are kind of close to the vest when you're talking about possibly moving a guy and possibly keeping them. What was the motive or the incentive for them to be so open about it? Because they're still going to get calls, regardless of what they said.
I think it's because it was going to get out. If you took a lot of phone calls from a lot of teams, and there were a lot of teams interested in calling, and then you call them back and say, we're taking him off the market, it was going to get out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it did to other sources, it did to my sources, kind of just say, hey, those phone calls are being made that we're pulling back. So I think, you know, it was getting out anyway.
And the thing about Millsap, his contract status, which is something that, from what I've heard, might make teams a little bit leery of giving away too many assets for him. Did it ever get to the point where they were seriously thinking about this, or was this just something that they were just still internally discussing among themselves?
No, they had deals on the table, I think, and there were lots of teams interested. And they had deals on the table at this summer when they looked to move him when the Al Horford negotiations were going on. So I believe it got to the point there were deals on the table. They had to decide. The huge factor in all of this with him, as you said, is he has an opt-out year next year. And teams want to know if they can re-sign him. And I can tell you the Sacramento Kings were a team that made several phone calls to say, can we re-sign him? No, then we're not giving up what you think we might want to give up for him. That's a huge part of it.
How did Paul handle all this? Because, I mean, in the past, you know, he's a vet. I know he's heard, you know, trade rumors. Right. But when you see Al leave the free agency, you see Teague, you know, traded. You see Korver. That core group is being broke up. I mean, I would imagine that's – you take these – I would imagine these rumors you took a little bit more serious than maybe previous ones.
Yeah, he's the lone starter remaining from the 60-win team.
Which was just a couple years ago.
2 years ago.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, so – I think it's fair to say that he was annoyed, or maybe more, when it came up during the summer. Mm-hmm. And I think now he's certainly been professional about it. He certainly said all the right things. He certainly made it clear he wants to stay in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That is his priority or his preference. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, he said the right things there. Now, you know, like I said, it's going to be a different story come this summer when he opts out and then becomes a free agent and starts listening. Yeah. But for right now, he said all the right things, but it is fair to say he was annoyed by it this summer.
Yeah. When you talk about saying all the right things, Wes Wilcox probably would not fall in that category, which is some of the comments that he got a little bit of heat over. On the heels of what happened with Danny Ferry and now this, how is this organization handling yet another kind of off-the-court brouhaha from their front office officials?
They're not happy about it. They certainly don't need this to come to light again, considering what they went through. This is a little different, and there's a lot of conflicting reports out about it. The thing about Bruce Levinson was what he said was on paper in an email. What Danny Ferry said was on tape. And there's some discussion exactly what Wes said, and I think that plays a lot into it because, I mean, did he say something that was inappropriate? Yeah, probably. Did he say something that was racist and requires termination? I don't think it rose to that level. But certainly, this organization, even before the Danny Ferry stuff, didn't need another black guy. And so they've got a little one now that they're dealing with. So it's kind of internal. I don't think it's to the magnitude of those situations before, but it's something that they didn't want to have to deal with.
Yeah, and just for full disclosure, I've known Wes a really long time, and to hear those comments come from him shocked me, because I don't believe that's who he is. I've known him, I've known his family a really long time. It's an unfortunate situation, and I'm glad that the Hawks are being proactive in dealing with it, but not necessarily just pulling out the guillotine and just trying to completely, you know, do away with this in a very harsh manner.
You've got to investigate it, certainly,
right.
Period. But considering what the organization has gone through, you've got to investigate it. And I think they have done that, and they are still doing that. Mm-hmm. And I believe there may be some kind of disciplinary action, whether it's more diversity training or something like that, or you just can't say, even veiled, what the, you know, that, like I said, that quote I don't believe is 100% accurate, mm-hmm. But you can't even say something that leans that way to not be diversely acknowledge it or aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about a little bit earlier about Paul Millsap. They're you know, all chips in. We're keeping Paul. He's staying a Hawk. But obviously, to do that, you want to advance. You want to be better than you are currently. What are they looking to make a deal? Are they looking to trade their way into becoming better? Are there any Celtics that they might be interested in? Because the Celtics, and it's no secret, they are looking to get something done. And they've got a lot of young players, mid-level, kind of young veteran-type players available. I'm just curious if the Hawks, are they looking for anyone along those lines? Or what are they looking for?
That's a great question because I'm not sure at this point. I think they're always looking at assets. They always consider picks. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at them now, they've got their first-round pick. They got the Timberwolves' first-round pick. They now have a first-round pick from the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. And if you got another first-round pick from a Paul Millsap, you're walking into this summer. So I believe that's where their real focus is going to be. Look, this team is getting blown up anyway this summer. There are – with Kyle Korver, there were 8 people that were free to leave, either as unrestricted or Tim Hardaway Jr. as restricted. So this team is going to go through some major changes anyway, even if you keep the core of you know, Paul Millsap, Dwight Howard, Kent Bazemore, and Dennis Schroeder. There are going to be a lot of changes. And their draft picks, they'll keep those, obviously.
Right.
But, so I'm not sure which, I mean, they like those. They like those athletic wing type guys, and so you could see them going in that direction.
Yeah. That's Darvin Ham, by the way, former Detroit Piston, now Atlanta Hawks assistant coach. One of the good guys in the league. Still got bounced.
Just save your green shirts until tomorrow, man. Come on, man.
I got to do it today because I don't have to do it tomorrow. There you go. Still got bounced, my man D. Ham. I wanted to ask you about. This summer, there was some talk that even after they got Dwight, that there was a possibility that maybe they could bring Al back as well. Mm-hmm. How is that going to work with Paul, Al, and Dwight? One of those guys had to be coming off the bench, right?
Well, I think there, yes, is the short answer, I think. I think it's why they tried to move on from Paul. I think initially it's fair to say I think they thought Al would take less money to be here, and they kind of jumped at Dwight Howard. And I think it's one of the reasons they look to move Paul during the summer. There are instances where I think they could have worked because I think there are certain matchups, not many, where Paul could play the three, and you could have him at the three, Al at the four, and Dwight at the five. Not a lot.
Right.
And so I think it's once they had Dwight Howard in the fold and they thought they were going to make a run at bringing Al back, then that's kind of why they looked to shop Paul. And then when Al moves on, because they can't make that deal work, well, then Paul certainly becomes a centerpiece again.
Yeah, and just continuing along the Al Horford theme, first game back in Atlanta since he left. This city often gets accused of not being a sports town. One of the things that typically happens when you come back to a sports town is they show you a lot of love. How is that going to play out here? I mean, is he going to get the, you know, the we love you, Al, we miss you, Al, we're glad things are working out, or is he going to get like, you know, like he's in, I don't know, Philly or somewhere and get booed?
I think there'll be a bit of both. I think that you can't deny what he did for this organization. There will be a video tribute to him. I mean, the day he got here, started their 9-year run in the playoffs, that's not a coincidence. He was a huge part of that. I think there's a segment of the fan base that recognizes that. I think fans being fans, there's a segment of the fandom that says this guy doesn't wear our uniform anymore and we're going to boo him. I don't think it's going to be vociferous. I don't think it's going to be huge, but I think it'll be noticeable just because of that's kind of the way fans are. And I think Al's father, when he made the comments about the fan base, a lot of people here think Al said that.
Right.
And he didn't.
That's so not like Al.
Right, and it's not like Al. And I talked to him today, and he said, look, I will always, no matter if they boo me or not, appreciate and be grateful for what the fans did. So we've seen this some with other players that have come into Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They get booed a little bit. So I think it's going to be mixed, maybe 70-30 cheers for him. Mm-hmm. But just as fans being fans, he's wearing another uniform now. There will be a certain amount of that.
Well, one of the knocks on Al, even in Boston, and just when I've come to Atlanta, I've heard it from time to time too, is that, you know, Al, good, nice player, but doesn't give you the great numbers that you're looking for. Fans expect, you know, an all-star to give you 20 and 10 every night. That's not Al's game.
Right.
Why is he still an effective player? Just because you've been around him longer than I have, why is he still able to be an effective player despite not giving you the great all-star cookie-cutter type numbers that you're used to seeing?
Right. I think he's, first of all, I don't think you can take away what he means to a locker room and his leadership and on the court. I don't think anybody has a better mid-range game for a big man than him. The game is moving towards those stretch fours, fives. That fits his game. He certainly, the last few years, have made the three-point line. I think his defense is way underrated. Mm-hmm. What he does defensively, look at his block shots even while he was here. Mm-hmm. You know, the big knock here was we don't have a rim protector. We don't have a rim protector. Go look at how the blocks that Al Horford and Paul Millsap had. They can do that to a certain degree. I just think he's a total package type guy. Mm-hmm. Now, I can tell you flat out, there were people in this organization that are not happy when they looked at the stat sheet after a game and he had two rebounds.
Yeah.
Like, they want more out of that center position. And I think that's part of the reason they wanted Dwight Howard in here and were prepared to move on if that was the case. But to me, he's just an all-around solid player, especially in today's NBA game.
Yeah, solid player. And he's ours in Boston! Yay! Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Great.
Good stuff right there from Sherrod and Chris Vivlamore. Chris always keeping it real. Sherrod breaking it down. A couple of things stood out to us, obviously. Al Horford in free agency. What were they thinking? A, trying to lowball him, thinking they could get a hometown discount for this guy.
No, not today, folks. Al is at that point in his career where he's not going to get too many major max-level type contracts. And frankly, he did the right thing. He went to a team that was as good or better than the one he was leaving. He would have a more, I think, solidified role. And I think it made a really significant impression. The guys that came out to see him when he did have a conversation with the Celtics. And the organizational stability, that's, I think, one of the unspoken, not talked about a lot aspects of the Celtics that I think ultimately was a bigger factor for Al than I think a lot of people understand.
Yeah, and when you look at franchises around the league, you need that organizational stability if you're going to be a winner, and so far the Celtics have that. It's interesting, they shopped Paul Millsap, or at least listened to offers this offseason. That fell through, Sherrod. And so did they really think that Al, Dwight, and Millsap could work? That sounds like Chicago Bulls thinking right there.
Listen, that sounds like video game thinking right there. That stuff doesn't work in real life. You cannot have three all-star caliber players who essentially play the same positions. Now, in theory, you might be able to move Millsap to the small forward spot, but man, when a team goes small, he's going to get eaten alive because he can't guard, you know, small threes. That was a bad idea, and you're right. It is something that I would expect from the Bulls, not a team like the Hawks.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, Dwight Howard's actually playing pretty good for them, Sherrod. It's not like he's having a buster kind of season, but do you think Atlanta has any buyer's remorse? Do they feel like, man, we let Al get away, we like Dwight, but if they had it all to do over again, would they do it differently?
I don't think they would. I think they're very happy with Dwight because they wanted a more legitimate and what I call statistical rim protector. Al protects the rim even though his numbers don't maybe suggest that, whereas Dwight does – protect the rim, and he puts up rim protecting numbers. He gets a lot of blocks and things like that. I think Dwight, for what they want to do, is a better fit. They want to play more inside out, and whereas Al was showing the ability to stretch the floor, and that became a bigger part of his game. And obviously with Dwight, that's not happening. He's not shooting any threes. Unless it's three French fries he's shooting in his mouth. That's about it.
I know you're a big fan of Dwight Howard, dude.
Yeah, and he's a big fan of mine. There was a little tension there. There was a little tension there. Maybe he just had a bad day. Maybe someone took his Happy Meal. I don't know. He just didn't really seem all into interviewing, and I was, you know, right next to him. So I don't know. Maybe I had something.
Had something to do with it. Hey, we do know that the Celtics, they like Al. He's doing everything that they thought he would, knocking down threes, passing the ball. And so definitely no buyer's remorse for the Celtics. Sherrod, let's go around the NBA quickly and just talk about some of the topics really making headlines this week. I want to start with Derrick Rose because, to me, that's the most fascinating story. The guy goes AWOL. Frank Isola reported that Rose thought about quitting basketball. Rose shot that down, but he did come back and reportedly wants a max contract or a $150 million deal. What's going on with D. Rose, man? And I'm a D. Rose fan of the player, but this is too much drama lately.
Well, someone needs to get Phil Jackson off the floor for laughing at the idea of giving this dude a max contract. I mean, that's just absolute comical. The lyric that you're living on a different world, Derrick Rose, if you think that what you've been able to do since you've come back from your latest injuries is worth a max contract, that's crazy. Listen, what he did, flat out, he quit on his team. He left his team out to dry, and that to me is an absolute, it's not even debatable. It's not even questioned. You don't do that to your team, to your organization. Was he really in that much pain personally where he could not text the coach and say, coach, got a family issue, not making it tonight?
Yeah.
That is what? That's a 10-second text?
Right. And it's crazy how the Knicks handled it. You know, all right, he gets a fine. He's back at practice, gets a fine. But then they play him the next game, and he comes out and scores 25 points. It's sort of like they feel like they need Derrick Rose if they're going to make the playoffs. And I don't know if they are right now. I mean, this team is reeling big time. But it sort of sends out the message that, you know what, we need this guy this season.
And you know what? It also sends a message to those other players that, you know what? He's operating under a different set of rules than the rest of us. And to me, that has the potential to divide that locker room. And that's the last thing you want when you are a team like the Knicks and you've got to be a cohesive unit in order to be successful, to have clear and undeniable division that is going to seep into that locker room. I guarantee you that there are players who are pissed that he left them out to dry like that. And even more upset at the fact that the organization has basically said, it's okay, Derek, slap on the wrist. Now get back down and give me 25 points. Come on.
Hey, let's go out west now to Sacramento. Our guy James Hamm, who we had on the podcast a couple of months ago, and he told us this, Sherrod. If you remember back then, he said, don't be surprised if DeMarcus Cousins signs an extension with the Sacramento Kings. Now comes the report that it could be up to $207 million over 5 years. If you're a Celtics fan, do you kiss DeMarcus goodbye? Is this just a pipe dream? It ain't going to happen?
Listen, it's not done until it's done. I'm not buying that that's going to happen just yet. I think right now both sides are very interested in doing that. But listen, we got a lot of basketball left to be played. And I'm not sold on Sacramento doing that because that's a lot of money for a guy that, frankly, has not helped you win games. I mean, let's be honest. They are no better now than they were when he joined that organization. And for a guy to be as dominant a player as he can be on the floor, the fact that your franchise is no better off with you than they were before you, it says a lot about you and that franchise going forward.
Yeah, and it says a lot that, you know, at least publicly, he's saying, I want to stay in Sacramento. This is where I want to be. I guess if you got $207 million, it makes losing a little bit easier, I guess.
It makes losing a hell of a lot easier. Let me tell you something. Dude, I mean, with that kind of money, listen, there are very few things. Well, we ain't going to go down that road. But it makes dealing with living in Sacramento, dealing with a team that's going to get that head cracked 40, 50, 60 times a season, it makes it a lot easier. And that disturbs me because I would have much rather he say, I need them to step up and get me some guys around here, and then maybe we can talk about a max deal.
Yeah.
Get me better players. Get me guys around that. I mean, when you look at the guys that really are bigger than the game, guys like Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan consistently left money on the table so that he would be surrounded by guys who were better, that can help them compete at a higher level.
You see the elite players
in the NBA do that all the time.
No, but I never begrudge a guy for getting his money. Why should DeMarcus leave money on the table? No, see, now, I don't.
Well, listen,
hey, it's up to management to figure out the cap situation, not the player.
See, I disagree with that. I disagree with that. And I'll tell you why. Particularly when you are the face of the franchise, your investment in that team is a little bit different than that guy at the end of the bench. I mean, just to throw some names out there, Isaiah Thomas, what he means to the Celtics is a little bit different than James Young. I mean,
Should IT take a hometown discount?
I think if that's something that's out there, if him taking a little bit less money means you're going to get this player, you got to think about it. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you take less money and then help and they figure out what they want to do. No, they have to have a very specific player that they're going to bring into the fold that you know is going to help you if you take a little bit less so that they can bring that player in. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about taking less money and just saying, well, you know, you guys do something with that little money I left on the table for you. Oh, hell no. Hell no.
Hey, Chicago Bulls, the dumpster fire that they are. Jimmy Butler reportedly subject of trade talks. Then the Bulls saying they're not shopping Jimmy. They're not going to trade him. Rajon Rondo out of the rotation, but he was back in the other night because they were short bodies. We knew this wasn't going to work. I don't care how promising it looked the first 3 weeks, and I'm going to be honest with you. I bought into it, but it's clearly not going to work for Chicago, dude.
I'm just surprised that it's gotten to this point this quickly. I mean, I didn't think that it would start really, you know, going in implosion territory until we got a little bit closer to the trade deadline. I mean, Rondo couldn't even get on the floor during Rondo bobblehead night. Damn. I mean, that's rough. That is rough. I mean, but the thing about Chicago is this. I don't understand. I can't figure out how, you know, Hoiberg is a guy that likes to space the floor. He's a little bit like Brad Stevens in that regard.
Yeah.
And yet you bring in two guys who can't shoot. I mean, what kind of sense does that make?
Yeah, they that's been... the GM out there clearly didn't discuss this with the coach. I mean, they're clearly not on the same page. At least with the Celtics, you can see Danny and Brad on the same page. Danny's getting guys to fit into Brad's system.
I mean, there's so many other guys that Chicago could have gone after. And you know, the thing about Dwayne Wade, to me, you know, he didn't become reality until things broke down with Miami. So I get that. But Rondo, come on, really?
Yeah, really? I agree. All right, Shirai, let's get on out of here, man. Good work down there in Atlanta with Chris Vivlamore. Thanks so much to Chris for stopping by the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you tune us in on CSNNE.com, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, all the podcasting apps. Make sure you go leave a rating and a review as well. Check us out next time on the Celtics Talk podcast. Peace.